afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, April the 21st, 2016, 12:14 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're tuned into the Now program, and this is going to be a great two-hour period. I'm going to tell you what's coming up next hour on WWGH Radio, and then I'm going to tell you about this hour because we have one of my favorite people on. Love to chat with him every couple months. Coming up next hour, 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, under President Bill Clinton, will be live in studio talking about the currency change, which I think most everybody has heard about. So we'll talk about that coming up next hour, so stay tuned. But this hour, we have on one of my all-time favorite guests, if not my favorite guest of all time. He is an author. He is an activist. He is a comedian. He is thoughtful, provoking, entertaining, serious, and really, when the history of America is written in the 20th and 21st century, this man's name will be at the top of the list. He is a classic. There's no other way to put it. We welcome to these microphones, and we're always proud to welcome to these microphones, the legend himself, Dick Gregory. Mr. Gregory, how are you?
I'm fantastic and getting better. Thank you for that. Wonderful introduction.
Well, you know, I was thinking last night, Mr. Gregory, when it all comes down to it, who was more influential and a part of everything in the last close to 85 years now than you?
You know, it's kind of interesting that when you stop and think about how easy it is when you're scared. When you're scared, then there's a handful of people that will do anything they want to do. And just thank God that, you know, two things happened to me. First, I was born on Columbus Day, October the 12th. And as a little child growing up in a black ghetto, suffering all the indignities that you suffer in a white racist system, especially when the folks don't know they're racist. And so I, growing up, thought that holiday was for me. I really did. And what a wonderful thing to be October the 12th, school's out. And so I always grew up knowing I was somebody, because somebody else told me I was somebody. And then the other thing that changed my life, that caused you to say the things that you're saying, is I went to the movie. Every time the movie changed. So in the early 30s, the number one movies was cowboy movies. And then on Sunday, they had the big chandelier movies, the Depression and everything, so they gave people the big box items, the chandeliers, the waltzes, and all of that, so you could go there and dream. But in between that, on Sunday, sometime it was the big cowboys, but it was always the cheap cowboy movies. And I sit and looked at the movie, and I saw me. Now remember now, born 1932, the only black folks you saw in the movie was like Stephen Fetchett. And what it did, because the movies was the biggest thing going on the planet at that time, as a black person, you took whatever you could get. Now, Stephen Fetchett and those type of folks, they strengthened the stereotypes for white America. Why, how would they know any different? They don't see no black folks except in the movies. And for black folks, we got to see someone look like us. Now, it's horrible as those type of movies was with the stereotypes. We knew black doctors. We knew black lawyers. We knew black principals. And so the one thing about the cowboy movies was, I saw me. When I looked at the cowboys, I didn't have to see the Stepping Fetchets and all of the stereotypes. Charlie Chan with the black guy bucking his eyes and laughing and all of that. And so consequently, when I go see the cowboy movie, I'm looking at Dick Gregory. They wore the same clothes every day, same shoes. Never seen him eating in a restaurant. Never seen any of the things that normally you would see in a movie when it's not talking about you, but I related with the cowboy. Never saw him change horses. Never saw him take a bath. Never saw him brush their teeth. And so I came up under that atmosphere. And so when the Civil Rights Movement hit, before the Civil Rights Movement hit, I wanted to be a cowboy. And that gave me the right to be a cowboy, to go in, except when Dr. King was talking to you, John Wayne was my hero. John Wayne said, if you right and they wrong and they won't listen, kill them. Martin Luther King said, I don't care how wrong they are, killing is wrong. And so I take your time, my time to say this to you, to say that's how I arrived at this spot where I am now, where you can say the things that you just said about me. And so and everything just falls in place. You know, they fixing to do a one-man act on Broadway of Dick Gregory's life. And two legends, John Legend and Joe Morgan. And one of the interesting things that I'm so thrilled about, when you get to Broadway, there's few people that's still alive. At least I get to say, oh no, that part's not right. And so I'm just having fun. I have 10 children, 13 grandchildren, and the type of comedy, you see, I know nothing about show business. I didn't come from show business. I was born in St. Louis, Missouri. There was no clubs that a youngster could go to. And I didn't like the type of comedy I saw on television. And, I mean, it just sounded corny to me. And Bob Hope, everybody was raving over Bob Hope. But I noticed the women always got the butt of the joke. I didn't know nothing about women's rights when I was growing up. I just, something didn't feel right. And so people said, well, how did you decide to be a comedian? I didn't. I was just the life of the party. I mean, when you saw me coming, you know you was going to get talked about. We called it Joning and playing the dozens. And then one thing led to another and another and another. And then I started reading the paper. I'm working nightclubs. When I came through, a black comic couldn't work a white nightclub. And so I would read the white paper, and then I'd walk out on the stage and talk about how silly white folks are. And then in Chicago, there was a big murder case. Three women was killed at the reservoir, and then they arrested one white guy, unemployed dishwasher. So I would take it out, all black. I walk out with the Chicago Tribune and all the white papers in Chicago. I said, now, let's hear black folks. Let me tell you how silly white folks are. Here, one man rapes three white women that was in the reservoir walking in 22 inches of snow. I said, now, these can't be delicate women walking in 22 inches of snow, okay? And I said, one man can't rape three women, okay? So it's more to it than they telling us. Now, I didn't know. I'm just sitting there looking at how silly this sounds. So one Saturday night, I'm up on the stage, and I see these four white guys sitting on the front row. Now, I don't know the homicide cops. And they're not laughing. So I just go ahead and go through my thing. Then when I get off the stage, I walk back to the dressing room, and one of the white cops put his hand on my shoulder. He said, "Boy, we want to talk to you." I said, "You don't want to talk to me." And so he pulls his suit coat open and the gun. I said, "Well, why don't you use it? You know, I mean, you the cop, I guess you might be just a thug as bad as you cops are checking down folks." So then the other guy came up and said, "Just let me talk to you first. You don't need to talk to me. You want to arrest me, then you arrest me. You want to shoot me, then you shoot me." So I walk back to the dressing room, and then this other white guy comes in, and he says to me, he said, "I cannot believe you doing what I'm watching you doing about those three women that was killed." And I said, "Man, you get out of my face. I do whatever I want to do." So he said, "One of them was my wife." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry that that happened, but I'm just telling you what's in the paper." So then he come up with a bag, and it said it's $5,000 in this bag. "I would pay you this if you stop doing what you're doing." Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfect.
That's when I knew I had something. I'm making $10 a night, man. I'm working three nights a week. I'm making $30 a week with the whites when I'm family. And that's when my life changed. That's when I realized that there's more to what they're telling us than we see. And so from that point on, I started looking at the paper different. And so yesterday was a happy day when Harriet Tubman has her picture on the front page of a $20 bill. Now, I did shows yesterday, but my twist was this. First, Harriet Tubman is going to be on the front of the $20 bill, and that thug, he's going to be put on the back of the $20 bill, which was the ex-president. And he owned slaves. Now, I'm thinking about, wow, you know, I've lived to see the day that a white slave owner, President Jackson, on the front of a $20 bill, his picture's going to be taken off, and a slave going to be taken to slave owner's place. The fugitive from justice. And they had a reward out for her and her two brothers. And I said, "Well, with your face on a $20 bill, it'll be able to pay up whatever the reward is and whatever the reward for them." And so you just look and you see how fast things is beginning to change because the rhythm is changing now. And so so when you stop to think about what a day yesterday for black folks and decent folks, and then you stop and think about the fact that we was in a segregated system. I didn't know that white folks would take. I really thought white folks was free. I know legally I was free, but nobody could have told me that the 14th, 15th Amendment gave black men the legal right to vote. Now, we didn't get the right. Legally, we were. But a white woman didn't get the right to vote in America until 1921 after she went to jail. She marched. Some of them died. And I didn't believe I'm dealing with such a strange maniac that's his wife, that's his daughter, that's his mother. In America, in order to sit on the jury, you have to be registered to vote. That means a white woman that was accused of anything, whether she did it or not, she couldn't get a jury of her peers. So I started seeing way back then, there's something wrong with this system, and I don't believe it will ever get fixed, because when you treat your mama, the woman that carried you in her belly, when you treat her like that, then it's something deep down, deep down, that should make Hitler blush. And so we're looking at it now. And I just say, thank God I live to see the day to watch this election that's going on. And it's interesting, is most white folks don't see nothing wrong with it. They see nothing wrong with this at all. First, you got Sanders, who raised almost $300 million. And I see you got to be a fool to believe somebody from some little old way out crazy place in Connecticut and New Hampshire and all them places can raise that much money and nobody's ever heard of him. I mean, think about that. Nobody's ever heard of him. So if you buy that, then what you fixing to get, we Americans deserve. Because I've known for years, when you vote for the lesser of the two evils, and if there's any God at all, and it is, I'm not talking about the church, then one day you're going to end up with the evil of the evil. And so when I'm sitting here and I'm looking, I listen to the president say at the end of his speech, God bless America. Well, Hitler and them said the same thing. When Hitler and them got through making their speeches, they asked God to bless Germany. And so when you stop and you think about what we're looking at and feeling it, and then seeing what's happening in America today, and that's what Trump is talking about. I can listen to Trump talk and tell where he's coming from. Now, I don't know what his sexual preference is, but I know he can talk about everybody but homosexuals. And if I had time to talk to him, I said, how come you don't talk about homosexuals? Are you one? You know? And so when you stop and think about the newspapers, I mean, the stuff they tolerate off of him is unreal, but that's America. And that's how Hitler then got started. That same thing, fear, fright, messing with folks. And so consequently, I'm sitting and I'm looking at this, and from where I go all over the world. I spend millions of dollars for research. And I've watched stuff, and I have never thought I'd live to see the day that we'd be looking at an election, and most folks in America don't even know what they're looking at. For instance, where are they getting the money from? Where are they getting the votes from? I mean, all at once, I don't know who's counting the votes. Let me show you something. This ran in the Wall Street Journal. I ran for President of the United States in 1968. It was the 4th of November. So the Wall Street Journal came out Friday, on November the 7th. And here's the headlines. They had to shut all the computers down. They said the computers goofed, gave Dick Gregory 9 million votes. Did you hear what I just said?
I did. And
now, not another paper ran that, and yet, and I say white folks think they're free. Not another paper ran this story but the Wall Street Journal. And it goes on to say some machines just aren't to be trusted. Take the big computers in New York City. And it said, it showed Dick Gregory, they had to shut the computers down in November the 4th, 1968 election, because it had projected Dick Gregory to assume president of the United States. Why? Because he got 9 million votes in the state of Pennsylvania. Now, what do that mean? It means some kind of way they had tricked that machine for Dick Nixon, and somebody goofed, and it gave it to me. Now, this is all this stuff. We go to war and talk about the greatest right you have is the right to vote and all of that stuff there. And these white folks sit here, and I say white folk because they think they free. They talk about where else can you live like this? You live like this. Anybody with the people is stupid enough to let a handful of rich, powerful folks say to you, I'm going to say this again. Now, another paper ran this, and those of you all that's sitting out there listening to this, all you got to do is pull it up on your computer and let white folks tell you what I just read to you. The Wall Street Journal, the New York Times didn't run it, huh? The Chicago Tribune didn't run it. None of your major papers, except the number one, one of the number one papers in the world. That ain't saying too much. Said headline. And then at the tail end of the story, CBS anchor Walter Cronkite, after the error was pointed out, he said he wants to apologize. No. Now listen to this. Here's a dumbass newsman want to apologize to America instead of saying, wait a minute, let's see how this machine made that mistake. Not to this day. So when I look at the Trump, when I look at the numbers he come up with, when I look at Sanders, the numbers he come with, I know all this stuff is tricked. I see it's true, because not only have I been living through it and researching it, I'm looking at it. I've never seen it get this bold as it's getting now, which leads me, when I go around the world and talk, to say, I don't believe we're going to have an election this year. This is theater. This is everybody. And I know what Trump is doing. I'm not stupid enough to believe that I know. I'm the one who released the pictures with Ron Brown, was the first black Secretary of Commerce. Said he died on a plane wreck. I'm the one who released the pictures with Ron Brown with the bullet in the back of his head, and they couldn't deny it because the white folks that work at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology brought me the pictures. So they couldn't deny it, okay? And so when I'm sitting and I'm looking and all of this here, and watching it, and seeing it, and hearing stuff, I say that to say this here. There's no way I can believe in my wildest imagination. We just looked at the Bin Laden. The White House said, well, we're looking at, he's dead, we got him. I'm saying, do you Americans know it was 34 Navy SEALs that went in on the raid. Only six of them went upstairs. Six Navy SEALs went upstairs. And there's the ones that said they killed. Are you aware that all six of them are dead? All six of them have died in plane wrecks. One, the lead one, they said he was on a rifle range in Texas. And another Navy SEAL accidentally shot him in the head. I'm telling you this because this is what Donald Trump is feeding it on. All that racist, sexist rhetoric that he's feeding it on. America's been scared. But they're too punks and too sissies to do anything about it. So all they're going to do now is sit back and talk about how great America is, and they are scared. For instance, if my trifling cousin went into Cleveland, Ohio, to the Hilton, and killed five white folks, we know he gonna get the electric chair. But if Prince Charles' little drug addict son came here and killed 42 white folks, he's not gonna get the electric chair. And white folks don't want to say nothing about that. White folks want to say, and this is true, and anybody out there just heard what I said, if you don't believe that, then you need to commit yourself in a mental hospital right now. What the super rich can do and get away with, and you can't do and get away with. So again, I'm saying that I didn't know. I thought I thought that white folks, I thought white folks was free. I wasn't around them. I didn't see them. The only thing they showed me of white folks was handsome white men. They couldn't use an ugly man for a movie, the lead role for a woman. I didn't know how many ugly white folks it was until I went to college. But I didn't see nothing but it was in Hollywood. And so what I'm saying now is that when we sit and look and see what happened, the questions that nobody's asking, look at the marathon 3 years ago in Boston. Terrorists. When you commit an act of terrorism, you're doing that to scare people. Huh? You're doing that to create fear. Now, I ran in the Boston Marathon 3 times. And if you are running in the Boston Marathon, and I feel the same way about you as you feel about me, but if we were real close friends, I'm going to take a little group of mine and we're going to come and see you run the Boston Marathon. Now, hear this now. 2 days ago, the Boston Marathon, 30,000 people was running. So if you go out to where the marathon starts, about 40 miles outside of Boston, there's about 80,000 people there. Friends, people come from the town to see the beginning of the race. So if I'm a terrorist, how come I didn't blow it up then? How come I didn't blow it up when there's 80,000 people there? I mean, now the race starts, and 2 hours after the front runners come in, the bombs go off. That don't sound like no terrorists to me. If them bombs would have went off at the beginning of the finish, there wouldn't have been no more marathons for about 20 years because you had to grow top marathon runners. You had to produce them again. And so I'm saying, I mean, I'm looking at this, and I see this here, and nobody's talking about it. The press is not talking about it. None of that. Now, what happened is they sent in 2 top FBI agents from this elite terrorist group. 2 of the top FBI agents, and they took all of the investigation was no longer run by the local police. All at once now, it's run by these 2. If anything comes up, you have to give it to them. The investigation is over. They come back to Washington, D.C., and both of them get killed in a training exercise. FBI agents die and fall from helicopter. Are y'all crazy? What did they see? What did they see? 2 members of the FBI's elite counterterrorism unit died Friday while participating in an exercise in Virginia. And I said, wait a minute. And so what I'm saying is that when you stop and you look and you see what they're telling us, and nobody with the press, all this free press, white folks think they got where? Here's an article in the New York Times. 1.5 million missing black men. Now, that don't mean they in jail. That don't mean they ran away from home. 1.5 million black men cannot be accounted for. This is the New York Times. No other people ran this story. That's very, very, very important when we sit and we look around the Trayvon Martin case. Okay? How many people listen to me know that Trayvon, the murder of Trayvon, do you realize that case was settled about six months before the trial? The mom and daddy, they settled that. I mean, settled that. for $2.5 million. New York Times didn't run it. Okay? Now, how come we didn't know about this? How come a story this big? Now, let's look at the Trayvon Martin case for a minute. For those of you that followed it, stay on your ground. Most folks had never heard of Staniel Brown. Oh, they were saying, oh, what a horrible thing. That you can just shoot black folks and you're backed up by the law. Most folks in America didn't know when that Staniel Brown case hit and the world got to see it. It was 30 states in America that already had it, including Washington, D.C., including New York, including L.A. Already had it. Now, let me just back up for a minute and let's look at the Trayvon Martin case. Trayvon Zimmerman was supposed to be in the cops. When we checked Zimmerman out, we find out he lived 40 miles away from where the incident happened in a predominantly black neighborhood. When we interviewed black people, every one of them said, no. Something ain't right about this here. We know him. That's not his nature. Okay? Now, let's look at the story. He's living for 2 weeks with his dad and her girlfriend. And said that Sunday, which was the night of the basketball all-star game. They said he was looking at the games during halftime. He left and went to the store. Well, we all do that. We look at shows we want to see, like the baseball finals, football finals, Super Bowl. We all take halftime and make our phone calls, make us a ham and cheese sandwich, or run down the street to the store to get some more mayonnaise, some beer. Now, listen to this now. He was looking at the all-star basketball game during halftime. When we check it out, he was killed at 7:17. The all-star game didn't start till 8 o'clock. Halftime wasn't until 9:15. Now, if I know that, New York Times don't know that. Huh? And what did he get at the store? Skittles. I never heard of Skittles. Skittles and Arizona iced tea. Then when I check out Skittles, because as long as I've been reading papers like I read them, I never heard them tell you more about what a person bought than about the homicide. So I check out Skittles, and I check out Arizona iced tea. Then I find out if you take Skittles and put it in a glass, and then fill the glass up with Arizona iced tea, you get a high 3,000 times more potent than crack, cocaine, and heroin. How come I know this and the New York Times don't know this? Now, when I sit and I look at the payoff to the mother and father to find out the insurance policy was bought a month after he was killed.
It's fascinating, and you know, Mr. Gregory, this is why I want to ask you this question, because it's very poignant for us here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you ran in 1968. We are 3 short months away from this Republican convention, which is going to happen in Cleveland, Ohio. Mm-hmm. First of all, I find that strange because they're having the Republican convention in one of the most liberal cities in America. And mm-hmm. and with this whole thing going on about stealing delegates and nobody's going to make the magic number and they're going to march Donald Trump into Cleveland, Ohio with this racist tag on him, what first thing I want to ask is, are you going to come to Cleveland to see what's going to happen that week in July?
I wouldn't be caught dead there.
And why is that?
Okay, I think what we're going to see is an amount of violence to where they're going to have to suspend the Constitution, set up martial law, and it won't be no election. Otherwise, what we're looking at don't even make no sense. It makes no sense at all. You got Donald Trump that's standing out there. He ain't doing no more than what George Wallace did, except his is manipulated. When George Wallace came up north in that 68 election, and we don't want to believe that white folks up north is racist. They're not as violent, but they're racist. And the problem is they don't even know it. And so George Wallace was making so many inroads, they didn't shoot George Wallace to wound him. They shot him to kill him because he was about to mess up the election. And so that's what we're looking at. And that's what we're looking at now, except all this is planned. And so again, I'm saying that you got your governor from Ohio, or he's a Republican presidential candidate. Not one press member was talking about the police brutality that exists. The young black folks have been killed. A 12-year-old child that was killed in Cleveland. Nobody mentions this, huh? And he talk about what a good governor, how he got everything under control. That ain't number bull crap, man. And again, I don't know, I'm sure you remember the Waco bikers and that shootout they had. You remember that?
Absolutely.
Are you aware they headed to the convention? Huh?
I didn't know
that.
Did
you know that? They come into the convention. Now, if you go back, especially you folks that are listening, that shootout they had in Waco, okay? The cops was already there like 2 days before the bikers got there. How come they didn't tell us this? And when you saw the pictures of the shootout, after all of them were sitting on the ground after the shootout, the people were scared, sitting talking to the police, smoking cigarettes. Who are they? So they're going to be there at the convention, and they've already hyped it up that something is not right. There could be violence, there could be, and that's what I think we're looking at. No more elections, martial law, and there's no other way you can explain what we're looking at. Let me just take you back, and then I'll come back to what you saying. In California, 11 weeks ago, Friday, the shootout, where, what was it, 14 people was killed. Remember that?
I do.
All right, now, think about this. Did you know that shootout, that was at a Christmas party? Did you know that?
I didn't know that. Oh, yes, I do remember that now, yes.
Okay. Do you know it was 1,000 people at the party? And you tell me out of 1,000 people, nobody had a cell phone? I mean, when you think about the World Trade Building, people were jumping out of the 18th floor, calling their wives and family. You mean at that place, we didn't hear one shot fired? Huh? We didn't hear nothing screaming? We didn't see no ambulances? Are you telling me that nobody had cell phones? And then we listen to all this old crazy stuff about the FBI and Apple. Let me tell you something. And I wake up one day and turn on the news, and I hear that somebody done hacked into the White House. Somebody done hacked into the Pentagon. Somebody done hacked into Russia. Somebody, and you telling me you got somebody can hack into every important thing that ever happened. Do you realize this tax season, the internal revenue have already been beat out of $6 billion, huh? And you telling me that you can't get into some punk's car? You can't get into somebody's car? All of that is theater. That's what I'm saying. Now, let's go to France. That shootout they had in Paris, here's the soccer game, okay? And here's the president was there, so I said, boom. Everybody I talked to, all the researchers I know, said there was no evidence that the president was at that soccer game. Now, let's look at it. It was the biggest soccer game of the year, Okay? Now, why am I saying this here? It was between France and between Germany. Okay? Biggest soccer game. So that means there's going to be 3.5 billion people watching that game worldwide. So you know how long the engineers had to be in that stadium setting up cables? You know how much money's involved with advertising and all of that? They got to have the blimps. They got to have all the cables and make sure that every one of the major cities in the world, all of that's put together. All of that's fine. They got to do rehearsals and all of that. So all at once, there's a shootout at the soccer stadium, and we don't see one picture. All them cameras that had to be there, the game's already started. And how many people was killed? Three people. 80,000 people, three people killed, and they was outside the place. Now we go to Paris, people come from all over the world to look at the sites and eat in the restaurants. The only restaurant that they hit was a Thai restaurant. You know, people come from all over the world to go to Paris to eat some noodles, and they had more people killed at the concert. 150 people killed, and there's like 15,000 people at the soccer stadium. There's 80,000 and only three people killed. And then 2 weeks later, world leaders came to Paris from all over the world. Out of all the places you can go and have a meeting, they came to Paris instead of canceling it. What did they know that we didn't know? And now this little punk they claim was the ring leader that they just, in Brussels, arrested. He was arrested an hour after the Paris stuff, and they let him go. Okay? And this, and so, you mean all the press around the world, all of them missed that? And so, again, I'm saying, so now we look at the whole Trump piece and all the stuff. Somebody knows something. Let me just say this, because I don't know what our time is like. But let me just say this here, and my brother, I'm going to give you this assignment. I want you to hear this good. If I was coming to your house and we're going to do a book, and you live in a gated community, okay? One of the things you pay the most money for is the telecameras. Nobody, you got to tell them Dick Gregory's going to be here, here's the car he's going to be riding in, here's how long, and I got to show as I come into your gated community. Now, Trayvon, how come we don't see no pictures of him leaving that gated community, going to 7-Eleven, and coming back? How come we don't see pictures of Zimmerman? That's why I believe he was killed someplace else. Okay? I'm going to say this again. That's of you folks out there that ain't too bright like my mother if she was alive. Huh? How come you know one thing about cameras in a gated community? They got cameras all over the place. We haven't seen one picture of him leaving or one picture of him coming back. So when you stop and think about all of this now, I never heard of, to any extent, Stand Your Ground. Till the Trayvon Martin case. Now, brother, you're going to have to do this for your audience. I'm going to say now, Indiana have enacted a Stand Your Ground law against cops. First, I know y'all sitting there, he's crazy. Let me tell you, my truth ain't never had to be validated by your ignorance, okay? All right? My integrity, I would never sit and lie to you, you Americans, who lie to everybody, okay? Now, let me just say this again. Skip it for a minute. All them trillions of dollars worth of satellites we got up there, and y'all ain't figured out where ISIS came from, you think that all them satellites up there, you can see a flea. You can see the back of your license plate in Sears and Roebuck parking lot. But them satellites didn't test that little punk, because he works for us. Trained by General Petraeus. Okay? Trained. The guy who was claiming it's ISIS, when we had him under arrest, we put him over all the religious stuff and then let him out with a clean bill of health. And every time, are you telling me, oh, it's just like the pirates. You had them black people in Somalia. The greatest white military in the history of the planet. The greatest you can't find nowhere on this planet have white countries have a navy like they have now. And you telling me some Africans in Somalia who don't have 5 rowboats have backed up the greatest navies in the history of the planet and terrorize them and take their stuff. Come on, y'all. Huh? Now, here's what I'm going to say. Indiana, the state, in 2012, passed a Stand Your Ground law against cops. When I went there to interview cops, they didn't even know nothing about it. Huh? The governor said, I never thought I'd see the day I would do this. The National Rifle Association backed it. Now, I'm going to say this one more time. Huh? In the state of Indiana, they have a Stand Your Ground against cops. Now, let me tell you what that means. If you're in your house and they come and hit your door with a battering ram and scare you and you kill them, you can't be prosecuted. If you're in your car asleep and they bang off, now, that's got to be hard for you to believe. I'm just telling you. You text it. You folks that's listening that think I'm so crazy, you text it and then wonder what's wrong with the cops in this country that will let something like that go through, and most of them don't even know about it. So again, I'm saying, to get back to you, brother, this election, when you sit and you look at the stuff that's going down, none of it is making no sense at all. None of it is making no sense at all.
Mr. Gregory, we are unfortunately out of time, but there are 3 things I know. Number 1, you're never boring. Number 2, you're always informative. And number 3, after this interview, when the convention happens in Cleveland, I might be coming to your house to stay.
As long as you don't bring your gun.
Dick Gregory, one of a kind. Thank you, Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, my brother.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
We'll be right back after this break with 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. Stay tuned. And we're already on the heater again.
I'm sorry. It's killing me here.
No, let me tell the story about the heat.
Oh, okay.
Okay, let's get into this right away. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
Hemmerly's Flower.